Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHWLOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking the Oscar wrap-ups and Predestination full spoilers.
I've got my tux on. How about you?
Born with it.
Wait a minute. I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello! Congratulations, Aaron!
Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. However, this is our wrap-up, basically. We all just watched the Oscars, not together, because it's just not that quite of a perfect universe yet for us to do that. But someday we'll have the Out Now Oscar party. Everyone will be invited to some actor's house that we break into and throw a party in. But until that time...
Ryan Phillippe's
house. Just realistically enough to happen. The Oscars have literally just ended. I'm here now with, of course, Abe, and from Fast Film Reviews, we have Mark Hoban.
Hi, everyone.
And we're going to go over what we thought of the Oscars. We have all the winners and everything. We, of course, made our predictions on the previous episode, and so we're going to go and do through that now. And, yeah, we'll see what everybody came up with. And then we're going to get into a review of Predestination. We're going to go full spoilers on it, by the way, too. So if we get to that part, I'd advise you to see that movie because
I'm almost pretty certain that we'd have to go full spoilers.
I said from the beginning, we're going to go full spoilers on this movie.
It's kind of hard to be like, this happened.
It's a time travel movie starring Ethan Hawke. Sorry, starring Academy Award two-time Academy Award nominee Ethan Hawke. And I think three-time, right? Or four-time, right? For the screenplays for Before Sunrise and Sunset and Midnight, as well as acting twice. I think it's four-time nominee. I'm going to look this up right now, because why not? Are we busy? Are we busy doing the podcast? I don't think so. I can look this up while we're going to talk about the Oscar results for tonight and then get into
the race. I'm racing you right now.
Four Oscar. Yeah, I got it. Four nominees. Wow. Yeah, those two screenplay ones. All right. Moving on. So, we're going to dive into it. We've made our predictions on the previous episode, and we're going to go over what happened right now. But before we do that, Mark Hoban, what did you think of the Oscars, the ceremony in general?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was, kind of sluggish in parts. And occasionally I thought it was a little awkward. Sometimes I wasn't really exactly sure if people were in on the joke or that sort of thing. But, I mean, it was okay. I do think I kind of – Miss Ellen, it was kind of my takeaway from it, but I think he did okay.
I feel like Neil Patrick Harris is like he's likable enough where if it was someone else, everyone would have really hated it. But people like him too much to really dig into why this seems like a problematic ceremony where all the jokes didn't land and there were some weird bits, but you still wanted to like the
show. he's probably got that social capital built up that where people kind of just disregarded some of the stuff that he said after something serious might have happened or whatever. I mean, for the most part, I think it was okay, just like what Mark Hoban said. He just hosted the gig. He didn't write the comedy, and he just went ahead and read off the cue cards. It's not really anything too extraordinary.
But there was that box thing, which...
Yeah,
go
that
anywhere.
Was,
that's what I'm saying. It's just all this stuff really just didn't. It's not as though it was impressive or I'd really want to see him host again. It was just more of he just hosted a gig. And I'm not huge on award shows in general, but I don't know. You bring up a good point, which is just Ellen is a stand-up comedian. If you brought up somebody who could kind of go on the fly, kind of maybe that'd be better. But for the most part, he just did what he had to do.
I think his interaction with Octavia Spencer was awkward, and that prediction box thing. And then also the interaction with Oprah was also awkward. So those are things I don't know if – it was almost like they weren't aware that they were going to be a part of a bit. And if they weren't, then that's not good. They should tell them ahead of time. And if they were, then it didn't. They didn't act like they were aware of it. So and there were a lot of awkward bits.
The classic way to throw away was, of course, to draw in Robert Duvall, but that didn't work out this year.
Apparently. That didn't work out. No. Yeah.
The one time the comedy cut up Robert Duvall didn't pay off.
It's like that one time when they cut to Tommy Lee Jones during the Golden Globes. It's like stale face. Just, no, he wasn't having it. But yeah, I think that there were some awkward moments too. I think that there was just bad joke writing overall, and just really terrible things that were said after some serious things. And one of the examples that stick out in my head is live action or best documentary short for The Call. I forget, Press One for Veterans and Crisis Hotline. She had mentioned, like, hey, you know, this is actually for my son. We lost him to suicide. And then afterward, Neil Patrick Harris just, like, takes a lot of balls to wear that dress. And I was like, this is not the most appropriate thing to say right after she just admitted on air that she's had family issues. So, anyway.
And it was a long ceremony, Mark. You brought that out, too. It did feel like it dragged on, I agree. And it did. I mean, it was over by a bit there. But,
yeah, there was a long portion in the center of the thing,
man,
where I felt like, okay, let's kind of, you know, tighten this up, because I mean it's always like that at the Oscars, but this one felt
noticeably long this year. Yeah. Let's go. Let me just read through all these winners here, and I'm just gonna go from the bottom of my ballot. Best short film, live action, The Phone Call. Best short film animated, Feast. Best sound mixing, Whiplash. Best sound editing, American Sniper. Best visual effects, Interstellar. Best song, Glory. Best original score, Grand Budapest Hotel. Best costume design, The Grand Budapest Hotel. Best production design, The Grand Budapest Hotel. Best editing, Whiplash. Best cinematography, Birdman. Best documentary short subject, Crisis Hotline. Best documentary feature, Citizen 4. Best foreign language film, Ida. Best animated feature, Big Hero 6. Best adapted screenplay, The Imitation Game. Best original screenplay, The Birdman. Best supporting actress, Patricia Arquette. Best supporting actor, J.K. Simmons. Best actress, Julianne Moore. Best actor, Eddie Redmayne. Best director, Alejandro Iñárritu. And best picture, Birdman. So, we got through all that.
Did it.
Abe.
Yeah.
How many did you end up predicting correctly?
More than one. Fewer than 10. Around
fewer
6.
Than 10? You did that bad?
I did pretty poorly. A lot of things that I thought were going to drop did not drop. And also, I tend to really go against the grain here. I think this is the lowest total I've ever had.
I'd say you were brave, but that's not the word I would use to describe your picks for the most part. So there you go.
There you go. Mark Uneducated.
Mark Hoban, how many did you correctly predict?
Well, so I predicted 17 out of 24 total, but I want to point out that I did get picture and director correct.
Okay.
essentially the two most important of the night, arguably.
I'm coming picture. To you next year.
I feel like all of Poland might have been really happy about Ida winning. I mean, that's an entire country.
And the rest of them, I mean, actor, I think, was kind of up in the air a little bit. But supporting actor, actress, supporting actress, those were all pretty much set in stone. I think the biggest one that I got wrong that I think would be the surprise would probably be animated feature. I mean, I picked How to Train Your Dragon 2, which was kind of the favorite, and it ended up being Big Hero 6. That's, I mean, if something had to overtake it, that would be the one that would probably do it. But still, I didn't think that I would be wrong about that one.
Yeah, I got 19 out of 24. I nailed those shorts, which is what made me happy, and the sounds, the two sound awards. But yeah, the How to Train Your Dragon, that set me off in terms of ruining my perfect streak that I had going. And I was like, wow, okay. Well, they're
11 in a row at one time, right?
And then things kept happening. I did love that, like, I think I mentioned before that the Whiplash winning for editing, that's like my dream win. And so even though I didn't pick that for winning, I was very happy to see it win.
Right.
So that, you know, that happened. And yeah, I went with the split for picture and director. But so yeah, I ended up getting Birdman. But yeah, wasn't Linklater's day, apparently.
It was not, yeah, really. It was not.
Or Wes Anderson's, apparently, either.
At least Grand Budapest won more than Boyhood.
It won the most.
No, it won a lot more. Actually, the two big winners of the night, Birdman and Grand Budapest Hotel, they both won 4 awards, which, you know, Birdman won Best Picture. So obviously that's kind of like the
scales
biggest.
Tip, yeah.
Right. But both winning four awards, which is more – actually, four for Birdman is more than I thought was going to happen.
And, I mean, three for Whiplash, nothing to sneeze at right there. Yeah,
that's really good.
A little film that could right there, Whiplash. And what else happened? I mean, yeah, Grand Budapest. I certainly love, like, you hear all the speeches for it, and I certainly loved hearing everyone calling out Wes Anderson.
Yes, yeah, me too.
And he's sitting there like a little kid on Christmas Day with his hands clenched and his eyes wide open, and he was just so, like, happy, you know, for his crew.
For sure. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's a movie that's done in his vision, of course, and you can see that reflect in the film, of course. But, yeah, can he get those technical awards and the display win? Those
8 nominations total and finally winning one. So that's, you know, good for
him.
Take
that, Roger Deakins.
Because if there's one person we should kick when he's down, it's cinematographer Roger Deakins.
It's amazing cinematographer Roger Deakins.
What else happened? What else do we like? I enjoyed when Ida won for Best Foreign Film, that was the first of a couple times when the winner was able to talk off the music. The music, been able to continue the speech.
It happened twice. Yeah.
It happened like three times. I think both the shorts, like the documentary feature and the documentary short subject, like there and yeah, I mean there. There were a lot of long speech. I mean, this is why the show was long.
I think there were also some. There were long speeches, but
long speeches, and people had to keep saying Birdman or Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. That really prolonged the story.
My MVPs for the night in terms of speeches were John Legend and Common, and also I think they had a really good performance on their songs.
That was a very strong musical performance in a year that had really strong songs. Like those were really good songs, yeah. And I was happy to actually see them be performed. Remember that year when, you know, we haven't gotten performances of the songs? Well, this is a good way to make up for that.
And Everything Is Awesome song was really great. That was a good production number.
Oh, for sure. That was such a fun way to like celebrate that song and just the Lego movie. And I mean, if the Lego movie is going to get any presence on the Academy Awards, they did a good job of doing it. Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, the bring out surprise cameo of Will Arnett dressed as Batman, singing the Batman song with Questlove from the Roots.
Joker. Yeah.
Alone, like Lonely Island being on stage at the Academy Awards with Tegan and Sarah singing. I mean, that's a pretty impressive performance. But yeah, the Glory performance, all of them were really good. I really liked all the performances.
They were all really good.
That Glory performance was really strong. And it almost would have felt awkward if it didn't win after seeing that performance last.
Chris Pine shedding a single tear was very touching.
Yeah.
And I put touching in quotes, but.
Well, good, because speaking of touching, we did have John Travolta just abusing Idina Menzel's face on stage.
That was inspired to have those two present together. So that was one place where I thought, okay, good. They actually thought about like the two people that were going to present together. So I like that.
It was good because I was thinking, like, I was waiting for like a cut to John Travolta reaction shot, and he wasn't
there. Me too.
And I was like, oh, it's because he's on stage.
Right, right.
And, yeah, I agree the idea was good. It was the kind of, oh, we're still doing this thing as he, like, grabs her face and keeps doing the joke. It's like, all right, yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Well, they brought that back up in the lockbox bit, but, you know, that was awkward.
Lockbox.
For acceptance speeches, I thought that the gentleman, Graham Moore, who won for Imitation Game, I thought his speech was nice. It was concise, it made sense, and it was a moving kind of it came from the heart. So I thought I liked his.
It was a good speech. It was like I was hoping like Whiplash would just kind of shut down the Imitation Game from everything, but that didn't happen.
Right.
But then the speech was good to make up for this.
As far as wins, I would have preferred that Whiplash win that award, but I thought he gave a nice little speech there.
Mm-hmm. And then all the actors went pretty much the way that we expected them to, with basically Eddie Redmayne. If we still thought Keaton was going to win, it seems like we were just kicking ourselves hoping it would happen at that point.
Right.
He certainly took the award. And he gave a good speech. Eddie Redmayne, he got a good speech on there.
It was fun. I mean, I loved his performance, so.
And anything else that we want to address in these Oscars?
Did you guys understand Terrence Howard's speech? I mean, I know he was introducing three movies, but they all ran together, and I couldn't – he started to cry, and I – thought he was talking about Selma, but then it seemed like he was talking about Imitation Game, and I was like, wow, is Terrence Howard really like touched by Imitation Game? I couldn't figure out what he was saying or doing.
I think it was a mix of him both being maybe slightly inebriated and the prompter maybe either going too fast or just messing up. And so he, in return, acted the hell out of those performances to announce those movies, which was hilarious to me. It's like, wow, he's drumming up some tears. I'm like, I watch Empire on Wednesdays, but I'm getting it on Sunday night also. So here we are.
I mean, that'd
Now he should have presented with Taraji P. Henson,
right?
But anyway,
3-6 Mafia in the background,
wearing like shirts that say "Just One Fox" on the back, right?
And I want them to argue like they do on that show, right there on the stage.
Big surprise that Boyhood didn't win all that much aside from supporting actress. So I think that's one that I was kind of maybe thinking would win Best Director, but. Birdman was just on a roll, and so was Whiplash. So,
oh, by the way, did either of you see the pre-awards, like red carpet interviews as people
Negative.
Were arriving?
I watched most of it. Why?
Okay, so did you see Melanie Griffith and Dakota Johnson?
Yes.
They actually had almost an argument. She was saying, "Will you ever?" They asked the interviewer asked Melanie Griffith, "Will you ever watch?" Your daughter's movie?" And she says, "No, I don't think so." And then her daughter says, "Well, no, she'll watch it at some time. It's not that bad." And then Melanie Griffith as well is like, "Well, I don't know if I could really handle it." It's like, "Oh, come on, Mom." And like, they actually had an argument. It was kind of funny.
Don Johnson would have been cool about it.
Or what about Antonio Banderas? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know which one, you know, raised her more in this scenario. But
I didn't watch the red carpet stuff, though.
Let's see. What else? Anything else? I agree that I wish Boyhood won more because it, you know, was my number one.
It was my number one year,
but I have little to like complain about.
Oh, also, yeah, Michael Keaton, dude, that guy is he's a trooper, and I'm glad when Iñárritu asked him to come up, he just said, "Hey, it's great being here." So you know, kudos to you, sir.
He knows how to put on a good face,
right? Yeah,
like, I mean, you know, all these things happening,
right? Yeah,
all right. Yeah. Anything else we can talk about with the? I mean, there wasn't anything like super controversial that happened, unless you want to go over like Joan Rivers not being mentioned on the In Memoriam section. But
I hadn't even noticed that.
That was the one thing. I was like, oh, that's all right.
There's always somebody that they don't mention, and it always like is, and then they have some reason they come out with like, well. We couldn't because I don't know what.
It's usually like, weird because they manage to sneak in a bunch that like, you know, pass away like a week before the ceremony. Yet like there's some like major omissions that happens. Like,
right, but that happened a while ago.
Yeah.
When I was watching that, and I did forget that James Reborn had passed away this year.
James Reborn,
last year, and I was like, what? Oh no, it did. It was true.
And some people were complaining about Philip Seymour Hoffman, but they got him in last year before, like, which was like again a couple weeks before the Oscars happened.
Right.
But,
I'm sure there'll be more headlines that we missed in the newspapers.
Yeah.
Like all the snubs and all the major, you know, awkward moments with Neil Patrick Harris.
Snubs and flubs.
Yeah.
Next week's Out Now podcast, we revisit the Oscars.
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on then. Let's move away from the Oscars. Let's do some Out Now quickies real quick.
Yeah.
Each week and Out Now, we have one main movie of the week that we talk about. I got it in there.
I'm pretty sure that you said all of it.
Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
I haven't. So I'm watching Legend of Korra season 3 now.
Nice. Mark, have you seen any other movies this week?
I saw Kingsman: The Secret Service last week, and I thought it was pretty good. I liked the beginning of it. I really enjoyed the first like 80 or 90 minutes, and then. I kind of feel like it sort of deteriorated at the end, but I enjoyed the majority of it.
All right, I saw Hot Tub Time Machine Part 2.
Oh no,
the tubbing. it is not good. It is not a good movie, and I salute America for recognizing this fact because it did very poorly at the box office and has a C- cinema score. So there you go.
Interesting. Wow.
One wasn't that big of a hit either, so I don't know why they made another one. It just seemed like a silly reason to go back to a film that wasn't. It's sort of like the same thing that happened with Kick-Ass, and I'm not commenting on the quality of the film. It's just that the first one wasn't that big of a hit. So why are they going back to the well again?
The first Kick-Ass was fairly inexpensive and worldwide it did its due, but also the home video sales. That's what helps you right there. That's the same story with Hopped on Time Machine. It's a very good home.
But was it a huge hit on home video?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
I think it really got its cult following, yeah.
I'm saying yes to that question, yes.
Well, obviously, I mean, not big, though, because there wasn't any audience for the sequel then.
Not really, no.
Question.
Five years later, people didn't really want to see a second.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, like Austin Powers was sort of in that boat. It wasn't.
That's exactly in that boat. It made a lot more money on video than it did in theaters, and then sequel took off.
But I felt like with Austin Powers, there really was like a lot of like clamoring for a sequel, where I didn't feel that for this film.
Is there anybody in the film that is kind of giving their all and actually did a very good job that you'd like to point out there, Aaron? Or is everyone just like
Time Machine 2?
Yeah.
No.
Wow. Bummer. That is a bummer.
Do you know why John Cusack didn't come back?
No one knows. He was apparently never contacted, according to his Twitter, about doing the sequel. So I don't know if it was a matter of they didn't think they could afford him. This movie is noticeably cheaper than the first Hopped Up Time Machine, by the way. Or they just didn't want to write him into the script, or I don't know. I don't know what. They certainly reference him. they bring him up, but it's... I don't know. I have no idea. Mm. There is a point in Hot Tub Time Machine 2 where if anyone's seen the first episode of the first season of Black Mirror, there's a very similar scenario that's presented that makes me think, wow, why did this need to happen? And I have nothing else to say about this movie that will make it anything worth recommending. I mean,
interesting.
But I'm not recommending it whatsoever. It's got, like, a couple laughs, but it's just really not good. So, yeah. That's what I saw.
So, good non-recommendation.
Yeah. Mark, did you see McFarland USA?
Oh, yeah. I did see that. I wasn't even thinking. I haven't written a review or anything. But I just saw that, like, a couple hours ago or before the Academy Awards. It was actually really good. I mean, it's definitely a predictable film, one that you are going to be able to, you know, guess. But I think with these kinds of films, it's all about the performances and how honest they present the material. And this film actually feels very honest and sincere. So I actually came out of it enjoying it quite a bit.
Mm. All right.
Good to hear.
It's definitely it's hard to convince somebody because you look at the film and it just seems so, predictable. And it is. But I don't know. I felt like it's a Disney film. It's not as super glossy as I feel sometimes their films are. Like there's sort of this veneer of fakeness, I think, sometimes. And this film's – the soundtrack is really authentic kind of guitar music. And there's sort of a grit to the quality of the film that makes it seem like they really filmed on location. I don't think this was filmed on a soundstage. I don't know the background of the production, but it feels like they really went to the city and I think it almost seems like they used like local people in some of the stuff. Cause a lot of the people cast are not these sort of really attractive Hollywood types out of central casting. They seem a little bit more like genuine people. So I think all of that kind of contributes to the sincerity of the production.
Mm. You heard it here first, 2016 Production Design Award winner, McFarland, USA.
Better than Million Dollar Arm? Probably.
I like how it's like, probably.
It is, right, it's the same same studio and same kind of idea of sports. But this is more in the line of like, you know, I would say like Remember the Titans, but less glossy than that. Like
movie though.
Yeah, well, I would say this. I actually like this more than that film.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But I
should go check it out.
Like,
you're putting my nemesis up against Denzel Washington now, so this is hard to take, Mark. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Kevin Costner is good in it. Do you like Kevin Costner in like his biggest films? Because like if you don't like him in Dances with Wolves, or you don't like him in what are the films that he's like?
I don't.
That's where the answer is going to go right here. I don't like him in his biggest films very much.
Right. So then, yeah, it probably this won't change that, but he gives a good performance.
Hmm. All right. Okay. So let's move on. Let's this is such a slapdash episode. I don't even have a trailer to go to or anything. Let's just go straight to the movie. Let's go to Predestination.
What if I could put him in front of you? The man that ruined your life. Would you kill him?
By the time you listen to this, 7 years will have passed. Here you are, at the beginning of your new life. It can be overwhelming, knowing the future.
So what, you're a cop?
I'm a temporal agent. We prevent crime before it takes place.
What is it?
It's a time machine. Don't ever exceed the jump limit. It can be problematic. If you ever want to stop the fizzle bomber, you'll never get another chance. Time, it catches up with us all. You can do this.
What are you saying? What's that got to do with me?
You're the only one given to the world through a paradox. You must lay the seeds for the future.
I know where I come from, but where do all you zombies come from? What if I could put him in front of you? Would you kill him?
Okay. That should have been some of the trailer for Predestination. This is a time travel science fiction thriller from the Spielberg brothers. It's based off a short story by Robert A. Heinlein, author of Starship Troopers, among other sci-fi fiction. The short story was titled All You Zombies. This film, retitled Predestination, stars Ethan Hawke, Sarah Snook, and Noah Taylor. It concerns... I know we're going to jump straight into spoilers, so I'm just trying to figure out a concise way to describe this film. But it essentially... it follows the life of a time-traveling agent on his final assignment. He's trying to pursue a criminal that has eluded him, and he enlists the help of another person who has their own tragic backstory. That's pretty good, I think. Let's just go.
And that's why we can't do a general overview of the movie.
I'm gonna repeat again so that we are gonna go full spoilers into this pretty quickly, but I want to at least get some kind of general thoughts on this from you guys first before we dive into there. And so people that are listening to this that maybe want to see this movie, which they can currently get on a Blu-ray, DVD, or any streaming service that you can find it on, it's currently available for purchase or rent. So with all that said, Mark Hoban, what did you think of Predestination?
Well, I thought that Predestination had a really great setup, and it starts out in essentially the main thrust of the narrative starts out in a bar where Ethan Hawke is talking to this man, and their conversation leads to the background story of this guy. And all of that I loved, and I think that was a really it takes its time and it has a really good setup. That story then leads to them joining forces and doing a bunch of other stuff, which I also still enjoyed. But then the final third of the film, there's sort of a resolution where a bunch of things happen, and we'll get into that in spoilers. And it's so crazy and wackadoodle that it kind of spoiled a lot of the good buzz that I was getting from this film. It almost as if the writers came up with the resolution first and then said, oh, wouldn't it be funny if this, and then went backwards and kind of fashioned a story in order to make that happen. So overall, I will say I like the film, and I would give it a positive review, but it didn't deliver on the promise of the setup. I think that they botched the ending, and the resolution was not as good as it could have been.
Abe?
On the whole, I think that it's a pretty interesting setup too, And I think that there was some convolution, at least in my viewing of it, toward the end of the film. But I thought that it was really weird just to have the initial setup of them talking in a bar. And I was like, wow, this is going on a really long time. And then when it hits as to why they're doing it, I was like, this is amazing. Like, there's so many, like, this is a really cool plot. And then you kind of get to the end there. And it's like, I think I followed it. And I don't know where and when that might have happened or you know, how this became this or that. But I think I follow it. But on the whole, it's a pretty interesting concept overall. I would recommend it. I think it's one of those films where it kind of makes you think. But I think there were some issues that maybe almost immediately, right when I saw it, I was like, I wish I had somebody here to talk to me or talk through it with somebody as well. So maybe some things will become more clear as we discuss this movie.
That's why I want to get into spoilers on this, but before we do that, I just would say I love this movie. I was really a big fan of it. I like the, as you guys have said, I really like the kind of the setup for the film just because it was so kind of different. It gives you kind of a character that you follow until you get to a different character and you get this very long backstory and you get this kind of this powerful character study going on that turns itself on its head once that story ends in the kind of, I guess it'd be like an extended third act where everything that happens there kind of kicks into high gear and all these kind of twists and turns happening based off the use of time travel and perception of which character is which changing on you. And I found that to be fascinating. And I've seen this movie twice now, and it just, like, it leaves the kind of questions where I'm not questioning things because I don't understand them necessarily. It's more of questioning because I like dissecting time travel logic in time travel movies, and that makes me like something more when I don't feel like it's treating me like an idiot at war, or it's treating me like I'm it's too smart for me. Like it feels like it's purposely complex in a fun way to try to analyze. And because of that, I found the movie to be very interesting and entertaining to watch. And I do think the performance is really solid. I think Ethan Hawke and Sarah Snook do really great work.
Sarah Snook is amazing.
Sarah Snook does, she does some really good work. Given,
I agree. I think she was really a good presence in the film. And when we get into spoilers, I can go into a little bit more about what I liked about her performance.
Mm-hmm. So let's do that. Let's dive into spoilers. I will say, you know, we are going to dive into spoilers for this movie, which will basically destroy the entire plotting of this film.
So if you don't want to be spoiled, don't
listen.
This will
be the time to pause.
Or if
later.
You want to listen to this and then watch the movie and send us your thoughts, more than happy to do that.
Yeah, but so we can dive into Predestination and what's going on in this movie to be less vague about things.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
I'll start. Yeah. So one of the things that I found really interesting was when Sarah Snook comes down to the bar, she has this conversation, Ethan Hawke is there, and then she's very androgynous looking, and then she says, at the time, she says, like, I'm a woman or something, and then Ethan Hawke looks up from cleaning the dishes like, what? And so I'm glad that they established that right away, which is like, hey, you know, this person does look sort of male-female, but they give them a character for you to go with, and I thought that was a good part. But it was really weird just to have them talk in a bar for, like, half the movie.
One thing this job has taught me is that truth is stranger than fiction. I've heard some incredible. Nothing astonishes me anymore.
You don't know what incredible means.
Yeah, well, try me.
Oh, forget it, man. I'm not telling you.
Oh, you're scared it's not good enough.
Oh, you think that'll work? Oh, yeah. Are we 12?
Come on.
Bet you the rest of that bottle, I got the best story you ever heard.
And I know that's a really interesting setup, but I was like, where's all the stuff that I saw in the trailer and all this other stuff? And when they do time travel, shit hits the fan. It's actually pretty cool. About what's going on, and then the plot thickens, sort of. I also want to say that the way that they do time travel, kind of a neat concept. Not so much like the violin case, but just things around you exploding. And I was like, that's pretty neat.
We'll get back to the time travel. Yeah. I think it's very cool, including the violin case. I think that's awesome, way to kind of disguise a time travel device. But I can't call it an issue, but something about the film is the fact that I didn't watch a trailer, but I know Sarah Snook is one of the other stars of this film. And so having her announce that when she was a little girl, it didn't surprise me because I know there's an actress cast in this role. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what makes the film neat to me, where I'm aware that there are going to be twists that happen, and I could figure out a number of those things ahead of time just based off casting and even some makeup effects alone. But there are like probably like 8 or 9 twists in this movie, so I couldn't figure out everything that was going on, nor right. nor was I trying to, which made it kind of a trip to watch, because it's like, it's the film, I feel like, has to know that viewers are going to figure out certain aspects of things ahead of time, but they can't know everything that's going to happen. Where I figured the Fizzle Bomber would probably be Ethan Hawke in the future, like something like that. Something like that was probably going to happen. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out
I originally thought that the Fizzle Bomber was this, you know, young man slash woman that Ethan Hawke was talking to
it
in the bar.
It could have went either way. I could agree with that. Yes, I can go with that.
Right. I thought the Fizzle Bomber was going to be Sarah Snook's character too.
Can we just – I have to highlight that Sarah Snook looks like Leonardo DiCaprio as the young man.
Yeah, and yes. Jane DeHaan.
Yes. They all fit that. Yeah. They all fit the DiCaprio DeHaan.
And one thing that you talked about too is just, you know, there's this pretty interesting setup of, hey, this bomber's been going around here. Ethan Hawke's been trying to solve this case for years, jumping back and forth through time. What's their central date? 1971
is when the big where the bar is.
Oh, that's where the bar is. 75.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting just that he's going back and forth through it.
What year were they in when Ethan Hawke goes into the future and has his face reconstructed?
That's 92. 1992.
Yeah, it's like much.
That is 92. Okay, yes. I wasn't sure.
But I thought it was just really weird when you find out what happens, and then I'm kind of jumping toward the end of the movie, but I would think that they'd be more careful just in terms of, hey, don't run into yourself, you know, keep communication to a minimum. And then all of a sudden, like, Ethan Hawke meets old Ethan Hawke, and I was like, wouldn't something blow up right here, right now? Like, wouldn't the time-space continuum just, like, implode?
Well, that's assuming that, one, time travel exists, and two, it makes sense. Or it applies to a logic that would exist in other time travel movies, but every time travel movie has a different sense of logic.
It's different, right? But no, I mean, that's one of the ones that tripped me up. And then the other thing that tripped me up was, so I knew that one of them had to be the one that takes the baby. It was either going to be Sarah Snook's character or Ethan Hawke's character.
The crazy thing about all this is that they're all the same
character. They're all the same person. Yeah,
It's like adaptation with Nicolas Cage's character writing the movie The Three, except it's not a terrible movie. It's actually intriguing and interesting at how it makes it play out.
So this is where the movie lost me, because I liked most of it all the way through. I mean, I liked it. I liked all the stuff in the bar, and I liked even when the two of them, Ethan Hawke and Jane, join forces, and he's going to help her put her face to face with the man that left her. So then we find out that the man that Jane left her, there's the first bomb, is that it is herself. We find out that, you know, she's had a sex change, that was a woman and then she becomes a man. Mm-hmm. The man that she becomes is the man that Jane falls in love with because of this time travel thing. So that's the first bomb. Then we find out that Ethan Hawke is indeed the Fizzle Bomber. Then we find out that Ethan Hawke is Jane and John. So basically,
right,
he is his own mother and father. I mean, he had sex with himself, had a baby. That baby is him. That baby grew up to be the Fizzle Bomber. I mean, the whole thing is just so ridiculous.
That's the part that kind of got me too. I was like, what?
No,
it's all the same character. It's crazy.
Yeah. How does this work?
The part that really just bugged me is like when you see the scars in Ethan Hawke and you realize, oh, he is indeed Jane, because Jane was a woman and now was made into a man, and that's why he has those scars.
I'd also like to add to the plot point in case people are like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? So Jane has been born with both male and female organs. She had a baby. They had to take out one of them because there was massive hemorrhaging or whatever else. So they left the male organs. That's how Jane becomes John. And then that's how, when they travel back through time, they meet Jane with both male female organs. And John is presumably impregnates her.
You have cleared this up for nobody except people that have seen the movie.
Right. I would assume that only people who have seen the movie are listening
but
right
that's,
now.
That's not going to be the case. Some people are listening to this right now that have not seen the movie, and they're like, what's happening? There's something about a transgender person.
Yeah.
I don't really understand how it would all work, but all I can explain it to myself is that, you know, he's gone back and forth so many times in time that he, you know, his – it would be just like when you go back in time and you meet yourself. But in this case – she met herself as a man, and then those two – I mean, why would she – would she as a woman not realize looking at this man that this is actually indeed her? She can't see into the man's face that he has the same facial features as her? I mean, there would be something –
I mean, clearly not. For what, I mean, that's like questioning how come
– and it's a little
– How come Crispin Glover can't see like Marty McFly and realize that's his son in the field? Like, I mean, that's the same. Yeah.
Right. But Marty McFly didn't have sex with his father. This is the story.
It one step further, yes. I'm not saying it's not twisted in that way, but it
right.
I mean,
thankfully the movie has the good graces not to actually show them doing it, because that would probably be a little bit too much. But it's if you think about it, it's like it gives me a headache. It's like it's just
well, I mean, the part that still wigs me out, or in just in terms of like what, how does this work, is so he takes the baby, but he puts the baby at the orphanage by traveling back through time. It's like, what is going on here? Wait.
So the baby is the girl. The baby is the little girl.
Right, is Jane.
It's the youngest version of the one character in this movie.
Right. So, but then doesn't that just mean that they're destined to do this over and over and over and over and over again?
I don't think
it has a kind of 12 Monkeys ending to it. I mean, that's what it's going for. Mixed. I mean, it's the time travel logic in this film is basically Terminator if they continued time traveling again and again and again in that movie, where Terminator. I mean, the only reason Terminators and Cyberdyne exist is because they found the arm of the first Terminator, but how did that get there to begin with? That makes your eyes cross, because you can't explain this logic.
It's an endless loop. They sort of reference that kind of logic with, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg kind of question.
Which is kind of a cool thing to
They reference
have
it
in
on
the movie.
The jukebox by playing "I'm My Own Grandpa." I mean, it's very aware of what it's doing, and I love that.
And I also like the primer and stuff where he's tape recording himself talking to a future version of or past version of himself, so they know what's going to happen. One thing that I found interesting was that they bring up the whole entire thing that Minority Reports brings up, which is, hey, you always have a choice. You always have a choice of what you're going to do. Nothing is quote-unquote predetermined or written. But they don't really go into that as much because
the movie's called Predestination, so everything is predetermined in this instance.
They're basically done at that point, because that was like the part where he's going to shoot a laundry machine Ethan Hawke.
It's not laundry machine Ethan Hawke. It's Matthew McConaughey Ethan Hawke at that point.
Yes, time is a flat circle. Yeah.
Yes. The film presents a loop. It's not going alternate timelines.
It's
not diving into it. So, yeah, it is essentially this endless loop that keeps happening, which, again, it's like it's tragic in that way. But it reflects the kind of the mini story we get of Jane as she grows up and, you know, in her period setting. And the film kind of gives you this kind of gender challenge, which I found to be fascinating and really, you know, worthwhile. And the performance by Sarah Snook really sold that to you.
Yeah.
Then it takes that time travel turn and like flips everything in a loop in terms of how you're supposed to accept this Jane John person, because there's more going on than just having a gender identity crisis. There's, you know, a sci-fi element at play as well, the idea of having both sex organs comes from sleeping with yourself. I mean, it's a, like it's not like it wasn't by way of God or something. It was the fact that this person actually slept with themselves and had a child, and it's just, it's ridiculous. It is, but I found it so intriguing to watch the story play out. But yeah, it doesn't have a kind of definitive ending beyond like, well, I guess everyone's kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Well, there was an interesting idea too, where Ethan Hawke comes sort of face to face with himself as the fizzle bomber, and he wants to shoot him, and then the guy says, shooting me continues. I couldn't figure out, should he shoot him or should he not shoot him? Like, I still don't really understand. Because he says, shooting me is going to, like, he has to shoot him in order to, but then he's like, don't shoot me. I don't know. I couldn't figure it out. What was better to do?
Yeah, and that's the part where I was saying earlier of, you know, hey, you also have this choice kind of thing, but he ends up taking the choice that'll just make their pads, like, go circular all over again. because he will become that fizzle bomber.
So he does shoot him. So would it been should he have not shot him? If the, would no. that have stopped everything?
Yes.
It would have made him become not the fizzle bomber. Which the other question when does Sarah Snook start looking like Ethan Hawke? When does that happen?
When did he start looking like Ethan Hawke?
Yeah.
It's the beginning of the movie when the bomb goes off and he has to get facial surgery.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Because in the very beginning, that burned, scarred victim was Sarah Snook.
Yes.
And gotcha.
And then she gets reconstructed as Ethan Hawke. So I got all that. Ethan Hawke should not have shot himself as the fizzle bomber. And then what would have happened then?
It creates a lack of reasoning for Ethan Hawke version or whoever to go after the fizzle bomber, thus altering time in various ways on both parts. Like, a lot of these bombs don't happen, so things don't happen to begin with, but then this person's not going back and forth through time to try and stop this thing from happening. Like, again, we don't know what will happen necessarily, but it would stop the process of things of happening, but it's a matter of when, because...
But then the fizzle bomber would be successful, and he would kill...
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing that was weird, right?
Yeah, so there you go.
If he doesn't kill Laundry Machine Ethan Hawke Matthew McConaughey, then the bomb will have gone off in New York City in 1975 and causing 10,000 plus deaths. But then if he kills him, then he becomes a fizzle bomber. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
And then there's the logic of the fizzle bomber existing itself, where there's an implication that because he is the fizzle bomber and he's doing these bombings on purpose because it stops other worse things from happening. And so it's like there's like this morality thing here too.
Which is going into the future though, because he's bringing up things that happened in like 1980 something and whatever else.
In various times, because once retiring from being the agent that he is, he still has his violin case, but it's not decommissioned, so he can.
And that part was cool.
He can go anywhere in time, which is why he exists to begin with. He can go all over the place, undetected.
So, yeah, so I want to chat with you about the actual time machine violin case.
Yeah,
pretty cool. Kind
of. I really enjoyed it. I for one thing, I like the violin case idea. I like the idea of hiding in plain sight, so having this kind of device that's been fitted to look like a violin case. But then, yeah, just the idea of how time travel, like it gets things out of the way by saying it tries to locate a place where you won't be stuck in a wall or something like that, and people won't be around. It's basically a big shortcut to get to. You'll be fine when you time travel. Don't worry about it. But
the production values of this film, everything, was good. And it has a nice score. And, you know, for I guess it was an Australian film. And I don't know, I guess it did play in some theaters in the U.S., but essentially I think it was mostly an on-demand release, correct?
Yes.
It plays better than that kind of a film. Sometimes you think these on-demand only releases are going to be almost like the equivalent of straight to video in the past.
And it is a solid production. I mean, a lot of the effects are pretty seamless. Like there's on the Blu-ray, which I had to review for whitesofblue.com, there is a 75 minute making of that goes over just almost all. I mean, it's almost the entire length of the film right there. And there's a lot of, like, especially when it has the kind of the Jane and older Jane John version interacting with each other, there's stuff you wouldn't really know offhand if you didn't guess in terms of where the effects are to make certain things possible, such as when Jane and John kiss each other, there's just one person's not there seeing they just match up later.
Yeah.
And just the way the time travel functions in terms of how let's get back to that again, the time travel, like how it happens, like when you basically disappear and reappear, and the kind of the force of that just makes the room kind of blow in a different direction,
which I loved.
I love seeing that, and I love the, like, there's one where, like, Ethan Hawke Ethan Hawke does it a number of times in this film, and he's very used to it, but there's like a time where he's on a stairwell where it happens, and he's just kind of like, you hear the sound that it happened, and he's kind of like running into the wall because it's kind of exhausting him, and it just I like the acting there was really good. It just found really cool to me.
Yeah,
just him kind of reacting to, like, I just went through time and I'm kind of like out of breath and stuttering up these stairs, like you can feel that he's had this physical effect on him, which, you know, as someone that hasn't actually traveled through time, as small as a moment as it may be, it's effective. It adds to the atmosphere of the film and, you know, what you're, you know, seeing, what you're gleaning from how people time travel and the effect it has on
you. Certainly. And I think that I really liked the sound that it makes, and also just like the subtleness of it. There's a part where Roberts, I forget who he's played, or basically
Noah
seen
Taylor.
Noah Taylor. Taylor, yeah. So Noah Taylor shows up. in the hospital, and all you see is just the curtain flow for the back where Ethan Hawke is standing, and you know that there's been a leap, and no, Taylor pops out and has this conversation with him. But I thought it was really well done. I thought it was a pretty cool thing of just, hey, these mini sonic booms that happen that disrupt time and space, and they try and get as little, you know, of it as possible to not disrupt the rest of the fabric of the universe. But no, I really liked it, and you know, there's some pretty cool scenes where it happens. The car scene where it happens is pretty neat, you know, where his hat just flies off, the windows just break. So production design, pretty good.
The kind of the length of the traveling that happens, like if it's a lot of years, it has a bigger impact when you arrive, that kind of thing. I found it all to be pretty neat.
Right, yeah, where Sarah Snook is like, he mentions like this person has traveled for 20 years, you know, it's kind of a longer time than they're used to. So I think she's out for like a week, according to the tape that plays. The other thing I want to bring up is Sarah Snook. Again, we've all mentioned that she's really good. One of the scenes I really, really enjoyed is when she's talking to Ethan Hawke and she has to explain to him how she had to deepen her voice. And there's a scene where she's sitting on the bed and she says, "Hi, my name is Jane." And she says it in a deeper voice, continues to go deeper. She just starts crying because she has to become this all new person. And that's how good she is, which is just, you know, emoting on things that change her, but then they make you feel as though you're feeling her pains too. So
yeah,
I
want to see this person in more things. Like, she's very good in this movie.
And sometimes people surprise you.
I haven't been entirely truthful with you, Jane.
About what, sir?
In order to protect our nation's citizens, it's important we keep certain government operations confidential. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, sir.
I work for an organization whose primary purpose is not space travel. It's reshaping wrongdoings. It's a job for the best and the brightest. For the elite.
The elite?
Yeah. Another scene that she's really good in is when Ethan Hawke finally sort of forces them to meet each other. And so she's, you know, talking to herself essentially, and she's able to convincingly portray these two personalities, you know, the man and the woman talking to each other, and it does sort of seem like two different people. She isn't really convincing as a man exactly, but she does seem different. She seems like has sort of a different way of acting and her personality. So I liked that. I liked her performance, and that scene kind of highlights the fact when they're talking to each other.
So anything else on Predestined? I mean,
it's still a weird movie.
I love this movie, but I don't deny that it is a weird one, especially when I think I would have liked
it better if they didn't, like, if they made it so that, you know, Jane and John are the same person. That's fine. But then Ethan Hawke is a separate person. Not that they're all the same people.
Right.
The fact that it's all one person just seemed kind of silly. And I don't know why it just could have, you know, it has nothing to do with whether time travel movies add up, because I don't really expect them to add up. But I feel like like I said initially, almost they came up with the resolution, like, wouldn't it be, and I know this is based on a short story, so we can blame Robert Heinlein for it, but the same thing is filmmakers can do changes to the story. And I think I would have made it that Sarah John were one person and Ethan Hawke was another person, and then just leave it at that.
Which is almost what I thought that it was going to be, because I know that it's based on that short story too, but I thought that it was going to be something like Jane, she is the Phil's, or he, you know, the bar Jane is the fizzle bomber, and then they've been kind of abusing time travel just to get away with all these things, and Ethan Hawke kind of finally figures it out, but at that point it's like too late, kind of plot twist kind of thing.
When you're gonna drop a bombshell like that, the it needs to make sense. And like, for example, in a movie, I won't spoil it.
I don't think it doesn't make sense though. I think it's just a matter of how you're taking it.
Right. But like in a movie, I won't say what happens, but in the movie The Sixth Sense, when you find out what happens at the end, at first you're going, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then you realize, wait, it does. It actually all adds up. And so then you really, you love the ending, because it's like, that really made sense. this doesn't make any sense. Like it doesn't, even though you can just explain it away by saying, oh, well, time travel. It's too much for me to accept. And so I guess that's why
I think these are two different, and I applaud you for trying not to spoil the end of The Sixth Sense because no one knows that. But The Sixth Sense ending, it doesn't matter in real, I mean, it's about Cole's character. It's about Haley Joel Osment and that arc and as I know, a friend of the show, Scott Mendelson, will add, it's just icing on the cake. There happens to also be a twist in that movie, but that doesn't take away from the real drama going on in that movie. This movie's all about this. It's all about these characters. And I don't think it's just saying, well, time travel is why this is possible. That is why it's possible, but I don't think it's throwing it away. There's a way to lay out this whole thing, and you can explain it that way.
My favorite part of the film is that like scene in the bar. And I did sort of feel the same way, like, wow, they're spending an awful lot of time in this bar. They're not doing any time travel. But I didn't really care. I was sort of like, but I'm into it, so I'm fine with it. So like that's what I liked. And I did like also once they decide, he says, well, let me show you how to meet the man that he left you, and then he starts to show that stuff. That was all still good. It's just that when it got to the end, for me the movie wasn't necessarily about this twist. It was about this relationship between this what happened to this woman, honestly, if they really wanted to explore that, was horrible. And in fact, they sort of exploited it a little bit, but there probably are examples of this sort of thing actually happening to people in real life. Maybe, you know, back in the 50s or the 40s, where people didn't really know how to determine, you know, when a baby is born, how are we going to raise this baby? So that I kind of like that. I mean, the movie could have been really like serious, and it sort of got a little bit, it got so silly at the end that it sort of felt like, I think they started with a really great setup and then it kind of ended a little bit cheesy. So.
See, for me, what I'm huge on is just that the movie is dealing with they mentioned the chicken and the egg thing. You know, does this always just happen? Like, are you destined to repeat things that you have done? Like, there's, you know, the philosophy of, you know, essentially you're doing the same things that you've done for thousands of years because you're just continuing to live in, you know, past lives of yourself have just kept doing this. So Aaron and Abe has been on for like millennia, right? Which is great, but why does this happen? Or, you know, if you subscribe to it, then can you change it, kind of thing? And so the whole entire notion of just this cycle, this secular cycle, is pretty cool. That's what I really took away from the movie. The whole entire way of how it's executed and all the details of, you know, Jane and John and using a typewriter and then becoming another writer in 1975. I was like, I don't understand it. I think that's kind of a flaw of the movie, but it does present pretty cool questions of like, of time travel in general, in terms of what would you use it for? Does it really cause any sort of historical significance if you do it? Because apparently it doesn't. So
there's that, and then there's the mix of what we've been mentioning, the character drama involving Jane,
mm-hmm, right,
growing up in the 50s, and, you know, the things going on with her as a woman and as a woman that has gender issues that arise. And I'm not saying that you can easily understand this movie by watching it once, which I think is part of why it benefits from rewatches, because it's just a cool movie to watch regardless, but you also pick up more on, you know, repeated viewings, which is a plus in this case. But I do think you can lay down this movie in like a chronological order or whatever you want to do, and it makes a level of sense. Whether or not you accept that or think or regard that as, you know, silly or whatever you want to regard it as, that's a different story. But I don't think it's cheating in any way. It's complex, sure, but it's not taking any shortcuts.
Like, how creepy was that scene where after she has her baby and she's sitting in that room and then the doctor comes to meet her and he's like, okay, well, you had your baby. And then she's like, well, is he all right? And you're kind of worried. And then he's like, no, your baby's fine. However, we discovered something. And then the way that he reveals that and all that, that was all really good. Like, that was really well done. In fact, it could have been even like a great movie about like gender issues and stuff.
I thought that's where it was going to keep going. Now, I kind of forgot about the time travel for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I kind of liked all of that. And then when the last 30 minutes where it really became just about time travel, that's kind of where I felt like, oh gosh, maybe it was that the problem was that it was so good for the first, you know, you know, whatever, two-thirds, that the ending kind of devolved into sort of a standard you know, it wasn't, it didn't live up to the rest of it, I guess.
I would say, if you didn't think it lived up to it, that's fine. I wouldn't say it's standard in any way, because I haven't seen this before. It's not like,
no,
it's not like it has a big shootout at the end and people die and stuff. Like, it doesn't right. really. It has, there's only one character. There's not any people that die in this movie.
Well, there's two. Right.
Noah Taylor. And there's two actors playing, like, four people like, that are all the same person.
Yeah, it became Bioshock Infinite. one of the things I liked about that doctor scene was just the whole entire doctor smoking in front of the patient thing from the 50s. I was like, this is Dr. Spaceman, and also everything from Mad Men and everything that you've seen from people who lived in that time of, like, back in the day, doctors used to smoke in the clients with their clients, and then also, like, smoking in airplanes. Like, this is crazy.
Right, right.
All right. So I think we've spent plenty of time talking about Predestination at this point. You guys certainly would recommend it, just not, like, wholeheartedly, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, right. I would, yeah. I think that it really is one of the things where you should watch it with some other folks and have a pretty good discussion about it, just as we did.
I certainly think it's worthwhile, and I just, it's just such a, I found it such a creative and well-made movie, and I would certainly recommend
it. Like, Aaron, how would you compare this to something like Looper? Like, how would you rate this?
Star-wise, there's a half a star that I give Looper more than this movie, but I mean, it's Looper isn't as much about the time travel as this movie is, which is part of why I like it. Like, it has, that's more of like a backdrop for why things are happening the way they are, and I appreciate the movie for kind of different reasons to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a movie where you can change time. Like, it even handles the nature of time travel differently. But I mean, I like a good time travel story regardless. But also, like, I think Rian Johnson's a better filmmaker. I think Bruce Willis gives a and Levitt and Blunt, I think the actors are all better in that movie, and the kid too. Sorry,
right? Yeah, that kid's spooking me.
The Rainmaker.
Yeah, the Rainmaker.
I mean, there's things about that come with, you know, being a movie that has had more time to develop, and
yeah, that's
has
what I attribute
bigger
to.
Budget, and again, Rian Johnson as a filmmaker is someone I appreciate more. I mean, there's just things that like that put it over the top for me. Anything else on Predestination? We move on.
Oh yeah, I think we're good.
All right, let's move on. That's pretty much it. Next week's show, we're going to talk about Focus, the new Will Smith joint. It's going to be a big Willy weekend next weekend.
Na, 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 na.
Exactly. And let's see, what else? I didn't think of a movie for Netflix this week that's streaming.
The Academy Award ones.
Ida just did win a Best Pick, a Best Foreign Film nomination. So
there you
go. You'll see that. I've mentioned
Best Foreign
times.
Film, Ida, 80 minutes.
But let's see, what else?
And Aaron, you need to watch Citizen 4 now that won Best Documentary.
Yeah, when I get a chance to and when it's available, I can do that. Let's see, Mark, what would you say people should see in theaters right now?
You know, actually, I'll say McFarlane.
So a lot of the Academy Award nominated movies have been sort of re-released. If you can, I'd really go and catch Birdman if you could, because the movie is pretty good. If you can, also, Whiplash.
Whiplash would be the one I'd say. I'm just happy to see it win 3 Oscars tonight. That was pretty cool.
Of the best of the like Academy Award movies, I would recommend Boyhood. I like to Patricia Arquette. See her Oscar winning performance.
Aaron and I both have that as our number one from 2014.
So that's gonna do it for this week's episode about Now Theron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at wiseofblue.com for all my Blu-ray reviews. You can also find me on twitter.com/AaronsPS4. Abe.
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag Korra Season 3.
Mark?
You can find more of my work on my personal blog, fastfilmreviews.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter, Mark_Hoban.
You can find all the other episodes about Now, Theron, and Abe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Podomatic, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast. You can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. I'm aware that many people have emailed in on our Oscar
contest.
They
have, yes. We're really happy to see that.
Yeah, so next week we'll determine a winner for that. There's HHWLOD, that's the podcast network that hosts our show, along with other fun shows. There's our Facebook page and our Twitter page.
Just Google. Yeah. Use the Google machine.
And yeah, that's going to do it. Mark Hoban, thank you for joining us for this Oscar wrap-up / Predestination review.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For sure. And let's see. Until next time, that's going to do it. Everything still remains awesome, so that's always good.
That is good.
But that's going to do it. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome. more free time for my awesome community. I feel more awesome than an awesome possum. Dip my body in chocolate frosting. 3 years later, I shot the frosting. Smelling like a blossom, everything is awesome. Stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. Awesome to win, and it's awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose.
Everything is better.
Trailer for Predestination.
What if I could get you the man who did this to you, put him right in front of you? Would you kill him? Mustache. That's exactly how the trailer goes.